This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
I think I'd like to carry on from a conversation I had with somebody earlier, actually. I think it's quite a valuable one in terms of giving us something to focus on in terms of getting to know ourselves. You know, one of the dangers of stillness, which is, again, I mean, I guess you could say this is a paradox, if you like, is that it is an essential ingredient for the path of insight, is that we do need to have stillness and spaciousness within us. And our meditation takes us directly to that environment. We don't even use techniques to eventually come to that place, as it were, but actually aspire straight from the beginning. And also, you hear me coming back over and over and over that the absolute foundation of the whole of this form of training is awareness, is about being aware. And I mentioned it yesterday evening about coming back to yourself when you go off with your distractions. It's about coming back as a place to go, as it were, in case you get lost and confused in your own world, in your own chattering, in your own attachments, running after this and that, and all the emotions that go with these things, that you lose training, that you lose the practice altogether, you lose your focus altogether, and you're just so caught with the world. And that's the way it is for all of us, and this is the challenge of what we do. And then you can sometimes feel completely lost. And you just suddenly realise that you're gabbling away with yourself, and you're off. You're off in all of your attachments, chasing things, and you just sort of lose the whole practice, and lose any sense of focus and direction on what on earth you're meant to be up to. And as I suggested to you yesterday, that whatever you do, whenever you get lost in your distractions and you just wake up, as it were, you just, oh, Dharma training, oh yeah, what was it, Dharma training. Well, Dharma training is about being in the moment. So if you want somewhere to go, as it were, if you want something to refresh yourself, something to remind you what this is about, is that you come back to whatever's in front of you. Whatever it is, you're doing something, even if you're doing nothing, you're still alive, and you're still, even if you're sitting on your settee at home, there, you come back. You're lost, you go off for ages and ages and ages, lost in your thoughts and your desires and aversions. And as I say, you completely forget about the fact that you're meant to be a Dharma practitioner, and you want to, as it were, come back to first base, as it were, so that you can remind yourself, wake up, is that what's in front of you? Whether you're walking down the road, having your meal, in your daily life, in the time off the cushion, whatever it may be. Just if you can just retain that much knowledge, if you like, that much knowledge that this is about the here and now. So when you're off, oh, you catch it, and then just come back, whatever, just be alive to yourself. All right. And then you can sort of firm yourself up and take on board all the principles that we learn. So then you can as it were, launch yourself back into your training. And that's something that you can do 50 times a day. Never mind once every now and then. 50 times a day, or maybe even 100 times. There's no sort of outer limit with this. Is that when you find yourself off in your fantasy world, into your dream world, because that's what it is nothing more than a dream. It's not the real thing that you think that it is, that absolutely seduces you and sucks you in because you consider it to be absolutely real and concrete. It is not. It is nothing more than your fantasy. It is just like a dream, like you have when you go to bed at night and you're sleeping and you have a dream and you wake up and you say, oh, I've been dreaming. You don't have a problem with that, do you? You don't have a discussion with yourself that you've been dreaming. You may have a discussion with yourself about what the dream was about, but there's never an issue, the fact that you were dreaming. Well, you go from one dream to the next. Only this one is so we are so convinced by this one. But eventually you wake up that when you're not present, when you're not here now, you are asleep. You are dreaming. You're in your fantasy world. You're in the world that you've created. And in that world you get lost, and you create karma for yourself. And that karma means that you are perpetuating it, you're reinforcing it, and so it goes on. Eternally, there's no end to it. And it's good to just... It's a great way of shaking yourself out of... When you're taking things that you've been caught up with, taking things so seriously, if you can just remind yourself that, you know, this is all part of my fantasy world. It actually does help to loosen the thing up a bit, because by golly, we do take it all as absolute concrete fact, as a fact, and it's not a fact. So we do. Our aspiration is to be still, and when we're still and when we're spacious, we are actually, we're present, aren't we? We're present. And when we're in that, when we're with ourselves, we're at home. We are in the centre of our being, in who we are. We're not out there lost around the world, but we're at home. We're actually in our true nature, as it happens. We may not see it in those terms, and there may be lots of clouds around, but we are who we are. We're not lost in this dream. We may not see it in those terms, but if we're not lost in a dream and we are present and we're not distracted in any way, there you are, you're there. There isn't anywhere else to go. And in fact, you've always been there. You've been off in your dream and you've been here, there and everywhere. But actually, like the dream that you have at night when you're lying in your bed and you wake up in the morning and you realise that you've been all over the world in your dreams, but actually you've never left your bed. You've always been in your bed, and you've actually been asleep. And that's exactly the same in the waking state. Is that we're always here, but we get lost in the worlds that we create. But in fact, we'd never leave that. If we were not present, we would never be able to dream. So we are always present, but we take this whole thing so seriously that we don't see it, we don't realise it. And our training, all it is waking up to how you are. You're not creating anything. You're just waking up. There is nowhere to go. There is nothing to be. There is nothing to get. Everything is whole and complete now. And that's the fundamentals of our, well, I would like to think it's all Dharma training, actually, but I don't know. Sometimes I'm not convinced by that, because people get so lost in ideas about this business that I think they they completely lose the focus. What is actually all about? They're so busy, caught up in this thing called Buddhism and all the bits and pieces that have been created. That I think some people just don't have that focus at all. So distracted, so carried away by all the paraphernalia that we have created in order for us really to wake up. And if that paraphernalia is not helping you to wake up, then there's something's gone wrong somewhere, because that's what it's for. And I'm sure the people who put it in place in the first place were very clear about that this is skillful means that they put in place, is to orientate you back to this moment. But it has so many dangers because it's so full of profusion that we get lost. So we come to this, our main aspiration is the absolute essentialness of letting go of our distractions, so that we come into that, find that quiet space that's in us. Again, we are not making anything. We are discovering what is our true condition. That beyond that distraction, beyond that agitation and turmoil, is a place of stillness that's there. And it's where you really are. And it's where you always are, and you never actually leave it. You just get lost in a dream. And when we learn to let go of the distractions, which is what meditation essentially is about, is that we come and find what is our true nature, a place of nothingness, of openness, that has no parameters, has no views and opinions. It's like a mirror that sits there, but it has a clarity. Unlike a mirror that just reflects, this mirror also reflects, but it also has great knowledge. It sees and it knows, ultimately. And so we, as a fundamental, are finding this place of stillness. But that has a danger. It has a danger that it is a very pleasant place to be. It's peaceful. We all want peace. We all want to be liberated from our clutter, from our distractions. And so when we find it, it can be very alluring. It's a fantastic place to be. That place of peace and stillness, the world conflict, self-identity falls away, and there would have to be something wrong with you if you didn't actually like that. It can be very frightening, actually. It can be very intimidating because you're not in control. But once you get used to that, once you can learn to trust it and let go of, I've got to be in control, which is our normal state, I guess it's a bit like learning to swim, isn't it? You know, you're frightened at the beginning, you're going to drown, so you thrash around. And then when you trust it, you get used to it, and you learn how to let go, then you can float. But you can't float with fear. With fear, you'd sink. So we can discover that very pleasant environment, and that's the environment there where insight can arise. Like I say, we're discovering that the mirror-like quality of our true condition, and that's not just a peaceful condition, it's also a condition that's full of, it's pregnant, if you like, of immense knowledge, because that is also a part of our true nature. Our true nature isn't just one of peace and expansiveness and stillness and nothingness, emptiness. That emptiness is actually very full. It's full of wisdom and knowledge, but it's not full of self. It's not my knowledge. It is something that's innate in all of us, and that we learn to, through our training, it's like it will. Some of it will naturally arise anyway. Any form of meditation, once you learn to be still, even if you're just sort of doing some sort of concentration practice where that's all you're interested in, the very fact that you're still will bring some clarity to you. There'll be some wisdom, even in a samatha practice. There'll be wisdom simply because you become still, and there is a possibility then that you begin to see a little bit, even though you're not intentionally on that path. Any form of stillness, there will be some insight. Because stillness and insight are actually in the same place. You know, what you do if you're on the insight path is that you learn to tease that. Not only do you have that as a starting point, but then there are ways that you can then begin to tease that innate understanding so that it breaks through. Bit by bit, it breaks through. And that's why we have all these skillful tools. The tools themselves aren't insight, but they help to clear away the clutter and cut through the dark clouds, if you like, so that we see more and more. But that stillness, as I say, is non-negotiable. You're not going to get to know yourself in a life of busyness when you're busy all the time, which is typical of our world, where we're encouraged not to do nothing. We're always encouraged to be productive, which means that we have to be doing things all the time, producing, being productive, busy. And if you're busy, there's going to be no insight. You can't be productive in the world and get all the things that you desire in the world and expect to be liberated at the same time. So you're busy and you're doing this, that and the other, but you still think that somehow you're going to be awakened, an awakened being. You're just so seriously deluding yourself. If this is your aspiration, and in order to become, find that stillness, that natural condition, it means that you have to give up, you have to surrender, renounce. It's a path of renunciation. You renounce the things that you're attached to, the things that you chase after, so that you create a space. Rather than fill that up, when you let go of something, you decide you're not doing it anymore, you don't put something in its place, you leave it, and then that becomes a part of the environment of stillness. And then when you have stillness, then you can begin to see. So you can't be busy and expect to be enlightened in the same. It's called having your cake and eat it. This is so typical of us Western people. And we're not prepared to give things up. We're not prepared to give our possessions up. Not so much the material things that we got, but the stuff that we're always attaching to and chasing after, and making ourselves busy, distracting ourselves, losing our focus. And when we get into that, we won't discover what is our true nature. Our true nature is still and open, spacious. It doesn't want anything. It's not a part of craving. It is totally fulfilled within itself. It doesn't want to do anything. It doesn't want to achieve anything. It doesn't want to do anything. It is at perfect peace with itself. And this is what we have to rediscover. So the more still we can be, the more the potential. Nothing's guaranteed. There are plenty of people who can go into dhyanas and have this complete and utter stillness, and yet there is no wisdom there. It's not... it's not an equation where if you become still, you become wise. It's not true. There has to be a commitment within that stillness in order to evoke, to discover. It's like having a chest of precious stones that are buried here, there, and amongst lots of other things. You can't just stand there and expect them all to jump up at you. You have to go in there and look for them. And then you find them. You don't make the jewels, you discover them. But there has to be some engagement. Engage. And the danger with the stillness that is so important to us is that we can fall into that stillness because it's a lovely place to be. You're safe. Once you trust it, it's a lovely place. You feel, well, it's great, isn't it? There's almost no need to describe it because it's just, you feel safe and unthreatened. You're at peace with yourself. Why would you want to leave it? You want more. You don't want it for 5 minutes on the cushion. You want it for hours. You want it permanently. And plenty of people go for that. They very consciously go for that. This is what they want. I'm not interested in insight. They just want that. They want that place of within. There's no threat. No challenge. So you can just enjoy the natural warmth that flows from an unfettered human heart when it's liberated, when it's no longer suppressed by greed, hatred and delusion, but is allowed to find it just flow in its natural condition. And you can taste, you can experience that with these peaceful states, but we have to be careful. And the way that we be careful of that danger, we see that danger, it's a juggling act. This is why this is about doing it. You can't do this in theory. You've got to do it and experiment and find that balance between stillness and actually using that stillness to get to know yourself. So in a sense, it's almost like you're disturbing what is something where there's nothing there, where there's just this open, and this what is a physical experience of stillness and bliss also, peaceful contentment. It's that fine balance. And just discussing, say, is the subject that sort of came up a bit this morning, is that we come into a place like this where we battle through the elements to get here and almost didn't get here. But because we want to retreat from the world, don't we? We want to retreat from our daily distractions. Of course we do. We want to let them all go so they're not disturbing us, so that we come to a place of non-distraction, so that we can really focus on ourselves, so we can really become still, so there's nothing to disturb us. And that's what we want. And that's great. That's one of the characteristics of retreats. But also we have to be prepared to work with ourselves, so that when things come up within us, that's an opportunity. If we have an environment where we've taken the roughness, if you like, we've knocked the rough edges off of distraction, we're then left with just the one distraction that we are not going to get away from, however tall the mountain is that we climb, or deep the cave that we go into, or however dense the forest that we may lose ourselves in, there's always one distraction that we will never avoid, and that's ourselves. We will always take ourselves wherever we go. That's the one person we always take with us, and we can't avoid. And then there's our training. That's our training. And for example, like we really including me, are just really praying that we come here and we don't get distracted. You know, because we've got plenty of those in our lives. And then we end up with a dog that's only a few feet away from us. No cars, no television, no radios, no people, none of these things, all these things. And then we find out there's a dog that's a few feet away, that's yapping away. So what do we do about that? I've come here for peace. I haven't come here to listen to a dog that's just going to mess my weekend up. Now, what are you going to do with that dog? Are you going to make a problem of it? Or are you going to... No, it's not like something you can do about, like, you know, there's a draft coming through the window, which you can shut the window. I mean, that's fine. Or maybe there's somebody in the room who's disturbing everybody else. You can tell them to shut up, which I suspect would be something I'll be doing over the next couple of days. You can sort of deal with that, but things like this, the saying is aeroplanes going over or cars going up the road or horses going up and down, you've got to accept that that's out of your control. It's not something that you can do, but what you can do is make a problem. Or you can use it as an opportunity to get to know yourself. You are given something, you're being offered. In your stillness, in your desire to be in control of your environment, to have the environment the way you want it. The universe, if you like, as I often refer to it, the universe will come along and say, you're not going to have your own way. You're not going to control that, your world. I'm going to give you something now, just to show you that, okay, you think you are. Ultimately, you are not in control, and you're not going to have the world the way that you want it. I don't care how much you try to have the world the way you want it to be in your environment. I'm going to make sure that you're not. And I'm going to give you something. I'm going to dump something on you that's for you to do with whatever you want, because you're not going to be able to control it. What are you going to do with it? And that, for us there, with that dog going, we can get into all sorts of scenarios within our mind. Or we can say, well, there you go, this is life, and accept it, and open up to that experience of that dog yapping away and not allowing you to be in that place of stillness that you crave, that you really want to be in, that it's not going to allow you to be in that place. So rather than block it out in some way or develop some great aversion around it, open up, and if you do make aversion around it, look at how you're dealing with that. Look at how you're dealing with that experience that you just have to put up with. And use that opportunity to get to know yourself. See your relationship with yourself and the object. You want to call it a dog, you want to call it barking, whatever. There's you and there's this object that's disturbing you. Have a look at your relationship. Make use of the opportunity. Rather than make a big problem. Well, if you are making a problem, then that's something to look at. And to see it as an example, almost certainly as an example of your relationships with other things in your life. And really what it comes down to is that you want things the way that you want them to be. I want the world to be like this. And if it's not like this, I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure that it is like this. And I'm going to get upset, and I'm going to keep doing whatever I need to do to make the world the way that I want it to be. And that then becomes something that can create so much trouble in your life. because at the end, you're never going to make the world the way that you want it to be. But there's something inside of us that always wants to be in control. I don't want it to be like this, I want it to be like that. Things have got to be like this, and I'm going to make sure they're going to be like this. How often do we simply accept something without turning it into something, by making a problem out of it, by getting involved? Have a look at that. You can't have the stillness that you were absolutely really, really wanting. So make use of that distraction that's come along. Don't block it out. I'm not sure how you do that. Stillness by its nature is expansiveness, and therefore it would have to come into that field, but it would have to come into the field without it impinging on you in any way. If it doesn't impinge upon you, if you open to it and know it for what it is, and know yourself, and know that you've managed to go beyond attaching and making an issue, then you can come and you can retain your stillness. But it's not something that you blocked out, not something you turned your back on, but something you've bowed your head to, you bowed your ego to. You've given up this person that desires to be in control, that wants it to be like this. You've given that up. You've let it go. You've seen it coming. And you could see what's going to happen if you just indulge with it, if you just allow it to start kicking on. You see it coming, and you say, no. And you leave it, and you let it go. Then you can retain your openness and your expansiveness, which will include the dog, and include the car, and include whatever else may come in, and it won't disturb you. That's called emptiness. Emptiness means when there's no one there. There's nothing there that you identify with, that you make personal. That it's a part of your world that you want to be in control of. Now that's not easy to do. You might put it off. You might not. Chances are you won't put it off, because it's actually quite a jarring sound. It's not like a bird. Birds are lovely. We can really open and embrace the lovely bird song. Now, I don't hear too many people complaining about a bird, what it sings. We love it. That's a nice sound, so we don't have a problem with that. But a dog barking is not very pleasant. And so it becomes something that we don't want, and the barriers go up. And then, what's that dog doing here? Why don't somebody shut that dog up? Why don't you get into all sorts of scenarios in your head what you like to do with the dog? Things we won't discuss here. But these things can be a part of the world that you are creating around this. Ultimately, that is just, if you want to be technical, that's just a dharma. You turned it into a dog and into a bark and into something that annoys you. That's your world. You're the creator. In itself, that's empty. If we chant the Heart Sutra, that dog and that bark is a part of what the Heart Sutra and Shunyata is pointing to. You've made it into something. You own that. You own that. Don't you dare blame the dog, blame the owner, or even blame me. You own that. You own that agitation, that aversion that you get from that unpleasant experience. You own it. Look into it. You are the creator of that. That's the path of insight. That's where your awakening is. Use it. Look into it. See your relationships. So why am I like this? Why can't I just accept something that I've got no control over? I can shut the door if it's drafty. That's fair enough. But I can't shut that unless I do something incredibly drastic. I'm going to have to live with that. That distraction for the rest of the day, or maybe, who knows, maybe for the weekend. Are you going to make a problem of that? Look at that. Have a look to see your relationship. See how you want to control. You want the world to be the way that you want it to be. how you want to control things and manipulate things, and to see who is this one? Hang on, I'm supposed to have this true nature that actually is not attached to anything here. What's going on here? There's something going on. Nothing bothers it. It's not concerned about anything, so I've been told. And yet there's something, there's a part of you there that wants the experience to be the way I want it to be. There, look at that. That's your opening. That's your opportunity to get to know yourself, so that you can see that all of this is to do with your creation and your attachments. I am holding on to this. I am making a problem of something that is actually empty and neutral and is not personal. It is not me, it is not mine. But I've made it that. Look at that and see how you hold on. How you create and then you grab it. And then that creates the me. Me doesn't have to like itself. It doesn't have to like what it's creating. It's got nothing to do with like and dislike, but I exist. I don't like that distraction. There is your suffering. There's your samsara. There's your attachment to this thing that just has no end. And how you feed it. There's the fire that you created, the fire, and you are now throwing the fuel on the fire. You own it. Take responsibility. I am the creator. I am the owner. And if you can at least get that far, if you can get that far, and that in itself is no small thing, but if you can get that far, then you can say to yourself, well, I'm the creator, it's my creation, therefore I am the owner, I can let this go, I can uncreate it. It's my responsibility. And from there, you can discover how you let go and see in that letting go more clarity comes, and you can see how you create, and then you just declutch more and more. You're no longer fueling it. It's no longer something that possesses you, and therefore you can just leave it and let it melt away, because that is its nature. It is something that melts away. It is not real. It's not something made of concrete that's not going to go away. It is something of your creation. It's a dream that you are allowing to just fade away, because that's what it's made of. That's the substance of the thing that you've created. It has no substance, actually, in the same way that your dreams have no substance. These things and your relationship with the dog that you've made an issue of, that too has actually no substance. And so you make use of the situation. So rather than just reinforce it and just perpetuate it. And of course it's not only the dog. Of course it's not. Because, we'll all be walking away from it in a couple of days. You'll be going back home and there'll be lots of little dogs around you all the time. Only they won't have four legs and a tail. But they're all little dogs. They're all little objects that you've created a relationship with, and you want it or you don't want it. And if you can only learn from... this is the great thing about these environments. It gives you, you clear so much of the clutter away that you can see things clearer. And if you can just begin to see what you're doing to yourselves, and then when you go back into your daily life, as I say, you'll see all these little objects all around you all the time, that you've created a relationship with, you've created them. You've given them names and you've invested emotion within them, whatever, good emotions or negative emotions, whatever. And you form attachments around these things. And you become wedded to them. And therefore, when you do that, they're a possession of yours. You see them as a possession, something that's in you. And when it's a possession, you want the thing to be just the way that you want them to be. And that's how we create the world. And that's why we suffer. So to have something like that, I mean, to have, personally, I always like something going on. I wouldn't say I'm particularly enamoured to dogs barking. But I quite like birds and the breeze going through trees and stuff like that. I don't know if there are plenty of birds out there. Maybe we could invite them in. Because that then opens up, that helps to open up that avenue. If it's too quiet for us, then we can very easily, if we don't know how to use that true quietness, we can drop into that torpor, into that, I mean literally fall asleep. But if you don't fall asleep, you just go into this whatever. There's no vitality, there's no life there, there's no life, liveliness, there's no vitality to it. And it's just, you know, it can be pleasant, you know, nobody can say it's not pleasant, but it's not going to help you, it's not going to help you free yourself from your stuff, it all just falls asleep. So, I just wanted to, well, we've not got the dog. I'm not at all unhappy that the dog's not there, don't get me wrong. But if there is a distraction, it's always something I remember from somebody mentioned to me a long time ago, a Tibetan teacher in Sami Ling up in Scotland, leading retreats. There's a kitchen or a utility room next door to the meditation room, and he was really, well, I don't know if he was happy, he wasn't unhappy, and somebody used to go and put the washing machine on in all this tranquility. Now, you know, if you're on the Vipassana path, I mean, that is, wow, we don't do that. We've got to shut everything down. We want absolute quietness. But for us, we open, it's a path of insight for us. It gives us an opportunity to get to know ourselves, that we can embrace it. And that washing, you know what washing machines are like, go on for an hour and a half, clunking and clanging. And it may have been on several times, he never rushed out there and said, oh, shut up, turn that off. Don't you know we're meditating next door? Stop, we want to be quiet. No, we would let it go, because is on the same path as what we are, is that we open and we embrace our experience and we make use of what's there. I don't know if he went and got the washing machine turned on purpose, I don't know, but let's say he didn't. But he learned, he was accepting what was there, and he thought, well, it's not my place to go and tell somebody not, they're quite entitled to do their washing. And anyway, it's grist to the mill. It's something for us to work with. That when we're not having the world the way that I want it, before it was all lovely peace and quiet, and now there is this devil that's come to disturb us with all of this noise. Well, that's not our spirit. That's not our attitude. We don't do that. We don't try to control the world. We don't try to make the world the way that we want it. We try to accept things as they come along. That's the difference in spirit. The spirit that we got is one of openness, and we embrace everything and say yes to it, and then we work with whatever we experience. And that's got nothing to do with good and bad, right and wrong, like and dislike, whatever, whatever comes along, and life is like that, isn't it? Is that it's always presenting us with challenges on a daily basis, virtually. And for us, that's our environment where we learn to become comfortable in, where we go into and say thank you to, because it's giving us the opportunity to get to know ourselves. And hopefully when that opportunity comes, we've got some perspective of what this training is about, and we've also learned to bring some stillness, some openness, that spirit of openness and stillness to those experiences. And when you do, the more of that environment that you have with you, the more, without question, in fact, without it, you're never going to know the truth of this thing that you're attached to, the truth of it. You're only going to know the truth of it is when you have that ability to be able to reflect with your awareness is present. Your awareness is a manifestation of stillness. When your awareness is truly with you, there isn't anything else there. When there's lots of clutter, then you lose your awareness. So you can have that awareness because you've nurtured it. You know that this is so important. This is non-negotiable with what we do. And that's why we come to the cushion time and time again, to find that place, to come to that place and discover it, learn to trust it. In itself, actually, is an incredibly boring place because there isn't anything there. And this is what defeats so many people. You find the stillness and then the thought. And I know many times that people have said this to me, oh, I found the stillness, I've got the... So what's next? You want to do something. You get bored, because it is until you understand what you're on the threshold of, until you understand what you can do with this experience, it can be very, very boring, to the extent where you fall asleep. Or you just get so bored, you just want to start, just bring a few little fantasies up, fill the time up, because you're bored, sitting there. And to get to know that, to become familiar with that experience, to open up to it more, to become familiar, give yourself to it, so that when things come along, you can retain that, because it develops a steadfastness. It's like it becomes rooted, so that it becomes more and more difficult to lose it, for it to become disturbed. So when things come along, they don't disturb it, so that you have that environment and yet you've got something, you've got some attachment come, some aversion, and yet you can still retain that ability to reflect and to look into and to get to know. So that's why it's so crucial. And unless you have that environment, you will never have the ability to reflect and to get to know. And it's only when you can reflect and to get to know and that you have the ability to let go. Because that is what it's all about. It's all about attachment. This whole thing is about attachment. And our inability to let go. And the reason why we suffer is because of attachment. Not because of the scenario, the thing, the dog, the whatever, the people, situations in our life. That's not the suffering. The suffering is that you can't let things go. It's all about attachment. And it's only when you have a clarity, a growing clarity, something that you are discovering within yourself, your ability to become alive and to observe the experience, then to get to know the truth of the thing, because you don't know the truth. If you knew the truth of things that you're attached to, you would not be attached. you would not attach yourself. So the fact that you get lost and pulled, and you think you're the bee's knees, the fact that you're pulled around shows that there's a great deal of ignorance there, that you don't actually know what's going on. You're completely bamboozled by the whole, completely deceived by the whole situation. Because if you knew the truth of these things, these experiences, you wouldn't get attached. You would let them go. You would see the truth. You would just... You may... Non-attachment does not mean to say that you don't engage with things. That's the misunderstanding that people often get. They think that non-attachment is about retreating into a place of dullness. It's not at all. There is nothing stopping you from engaging and functioning and enjoying, hopefully, the things that you experience, that you engage with, to become involved with all of those things and to do your best to live life, in other words, is absolutely what this is about. But because you engage and involve yourself and give yourself to things, it doesn't mean to say that you have to get attached to them. But when the thing goes into change, as things are always in a flux, have the ability to let them go, not linger, not stay with, not want things to be there when they're changing. When the law of the universe is displaying its condition of a flux and of impermanence, of trying to hold, no, you must, it must, I must keep it. When you can see all of that, and then you can engage and then let go, then you're free. That's freedom. That's what freedom is. Freedom isn't about not doing anything. Freedom means that you're not attached to whatever your experiences are. And then you are free to enjoy this amazing, wonderful experience called life. The privilege of the human condition that can really appreciate the wonder that we are all a part of. But without that stillness, without that ability to discover the truth of the things that we're caught by, without that, then you're never going to be free. There won't be. There'll be just neurotic attachment that will pull you from one thing to the next, and feed the fire. Feed the fires that we create. Just throw fuel on, and so the thing has no end. And just coming back to that stillness, that ability to let go, that ability to learn to trust that place where there isn't somebody in control, but there is an ability there to learn to reflect and to see, is what we're aspiring to. So when you get the opportunity, like, who knows, we may get another dog today, or whatever. I'm dreading about six of them, actually, all winding each other up. If they're there, there you go. But just watch yourself, watch your mind, and see the world. And if we went round the room, and if everybody were honest enough to actually give their thoughts, what they thought, what their take was on something like that. You see the different worlds that we would have. We wouldn't all be saying the same thing. There may be a fairly common theme, possibly. But do you see how it would be different? We think, well, everyone's going to think like this. You'd be really, really surprised the differences that you would get, the different takes that people, some from absolute aversion to charity towards the poor creatures that are locked up there all day. And that's probably where why they're barking, is because they're lonely, they're isolated. That's why that dog was barking, you know. But again, we can think, oh, that dog, I just want to go and strangle it. And all the different takes that we would have on that one experience, which what that shows you is that there is no one thing. It's we each one of us creates our own world, unique. There is not like one world for everybody, as we often like to think. We each have our own nuances on that, on any given experience, from absolutely one extreme to the other extreme, and everything in between. And that should show you that there is nothing that's just fixed in this world. It's what we make it. In itself, there isn't. You know, in Buddhism we say we talk about shunyata, we talk about dharmas, if you like, empty dharmas, that we then hang labels on. We give things labels, and then we decide if we like and we dislike. All of those things are your own mental creation. And if you can see that, then you create, you can uncreate, you can let go. You can decide that you don't want that world anymore. And so you learn to let it go. And when you let it go, you're free. And all of this comes from this environment of stillness. As I'm trying to promote, your blue sky, which is your natural condition. You don't create the blue sky. But the white cloud that floats across and doesn't undermine, doesn't diminish, doesn't chase away, if you like, the blue sky, that doesn't cover the blue sky. The blue sky is still in place, but that white cloud there has the potential to look and to see and to know and to let go of what it sees and what it gets to know, but never losing that spaciousness. Now, if you can come to that place, then you are, to me, that this is optimum. You're in the optimum place for waking up. We all need a white cloud. We can all talk about the blue sky, but the reality of that is that there are going to be clouds, dark clouds, that are going to cover it. But to nurture that white cloud of clarity and insight, and whichever way, there is no fixed way of cultivating that ability to see and know. We are all different. We've got different sort of certain things attract us more than others. But the important thing is to have that ability to look and to see and to get to know. Which means to get to know yourself. It's not out there. It's not the dog. It's your world that you build around that. This is my world. My world is here. And all the tools that we can discover and hone and use in order to get to know ourselves and get to see that we are the creator of our suffering, the worlds that we create in our suffering, all of those within that image of a white cloud. But you know, without the sky, there can be no cloud. A cloud's got to have a sky in which to be a cloud, to be able to move. And just remember that the cloud comes from the sky. You can have a sky without a cloud, but you can't have a cloud without a sky. It would no longer be a cloud. So that cloud is always coming from a place of stillness as much as you can. As much as the bluer the sky is, the better. It may not be a holy blue sky. It may be a little bit hazy, but not profoundly covered, a bit hazy. But then from that place, then you'll see the world that you create around the dog and all the dukkha that you create for yourself and the agitation and how you can actually just wreck your retreat because you get so caught up in yourself over something which in itself is actually none of your business. It is not something you decide to own this thing and make something around it. And that coming on retreat like this gives us that opportunity to remind ourselves of what this is all about, what we're doing. And that's the great value of a retreat, that we can stay pretty focused. So to stay focused and to open up to what is yourself. It is not out there, it's in here. Own everything that's in you. When you own everything that you experience, when you own all of that, then you can change it. Whenever you dump it on somebody else, dump it on the dog, you will not change. So, something to reflect upon.